This is Philosophy Bites with me, David Edmonds.
And me, Nigel Warburton.
Philosophy Bites is available at www.philosophybites.com. If you're listening to this and you're a student, or a farmer, or perhaps an engineer, or a soldier, then you may feel that your role confers certain obligations upon you. Most students, for example, believe they're obliged to attend lectures, write essays and so forth. That's what they did in the previous semester, and that's what they must do in the next one. But Jean-Paul Sartre, the 20th century French existentialist philosopher, might accuse them of bad faith. Bad faith is the condition people suffer when they deny to themselves that they're radically free, when they think that their past determines their future. Such people are, as it were, making a metaphysical mistake, turning themselves into inert objects rather than necessarily free beings, beings condemned to having to make choices. Sartre specialist Professor Sebastian Gardner exhibited his freedom by choosing to speak to Philosophy Bites.
Sebastian Gardner, welcome to Philosophy Bites.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
We're going to talk about Jean-Paul Sartre's notion of bad faith. To begin with, could we just say what he means by bad faith?
Well, the concept of bad faith is introduced in Being and Nothingness as a concept that applies to, describes various forms of behaviour that Sartre illustrates in various ways. So we have these very well-known vignettes or anecdotal little illustrations of individuals who are said to be in bad faith. And bad faith is a condition, it's an existential condition. The more familiar concept that appears to correspond to it and does indeed map some of the features that we see in individuals who are said to be in bad faith is the concept of self-deception.
And one of the most famous examples he uses is this example of a cafe waiter who he says is in bad faith. What's that all about?
Sartre describes this waiter in certainly very, very unfavourable terms, and there is certainly an ethical edge to Sartre's concept. The waiter is identified, rightly or wrongly, by Sartre as immersing himself in his role and experiencing his function as a waiter in a way which brings him a kind of illicit satisfaction, in Sartre's view. And the illicit satisfaction, on Sartre's account, consists in the waiter's thinking of himself, or maybe better to say, experiencing himself, in terms that are metaphysically inappropriate. The metaphysical inappropriateness, on Sartre's view, consists in the waiter's feeling himself to be or experiencing himself as a thing or as something, an object which has determinate properties in the same way as this table has the property of being brown and wooden.
The waiter is acting out a role. In doing that, he's denying that he's free to do otherwise. So to that extent, he's like a mechanical robot. He's pre-programmed, as it were. Is that what you're saying?
Good. Okay, yeah, that puts it very well indeed. He does say that the waiter is playing a game with us and a game with himself. It is a kind of automation of consciousness that the waiter is trying to simulate. The waiter is trying to represent himself as determined in all of his gestures and movements and actions by the norms, whatever they are, of waiterhood or waiterness, in the same way as the law of gravity determines the falling of an apple. And Sartre supposes that the waiter's behaviour evinces this false consciousness of himself, this false representation of himself as so determined.
There's another famous example, again, in a cafe, with a man talking to a younger woman, apparently trying to seduce her, but she denies that somehow. What does that one show?
Well, this isn't quite the same kind of case as the waiter case. And in a way, it's more interesting, and the connection of bad faith with self-deception begins to show through here, because I think it would be strained to suggest that the waiter is in a state of self-deception in any ordinary sense. The woman in the case that you're referring to is meeting a guy, and this encounter has the general character of a date, and she is aware of his sexual intentions, or at least she's aware of the possibility that the evening will come to a sexual conclusion. And Sartre focuses on, zooms in on the moment when the guy takes her hand. And what Sartre says about it is that at that moment, she identifies herself as not being her body. And this can't straightforwardly mean that she no longer believes herself to be or to have a body. But Sartre is trying to intimate the withdrawal of selfhood from the particular part of the body that the man has put his hand on. And this serves in a self-deceptive strategy by virtue of its allowing the woman to postpone the moment of choice, the moment when she'll have to confront the question of whether she does want to engage sexually with the guy.
So the man makes his move. He puts his hand on her hand, and rather than accepting it or rejecting it, she just ignores it completely, as if the hand were an object. She turns her hand into a mere thing, and thereby postpones the decision which at some level she knows she has to make.
Well, that's perfectly put.
And there's another example that's very interesting here. He's got the example of a homosexual coming to terms with his past history of sexual relationships.
Yeah. The ultimate question in this is really whether or not we can say that the individual is a homosexual in the same sense, once again, as we might say that the table is brown. So you've got this guy who's got a history of homosexual behaviour. And the question is how he should think of himself, what his biography adds up to. And you have a dialogue which has on the one side the guy denying that the sum total of his previous actions make it true that he is a homosexual. And then on the other side you have a guy who Sartre calls the champion of sincerity, who is urging him to accept the designation homosexual as the true meaning of his past behaviour, and in so doing to put himself beyond it, to put all of that behind him. And Sartre's suggestion is that neither of these attitudes work, neither of them are fully coherent. The first attitude, the attitude of disavowal, is unacceptable because there are certain truths Sartre believes about what sets of actions in the past amount to, and to deny that one is a homosexual, despite having had a history of that kind, violates all of the norms that govern our application of these sorts of predicates. And the champion of sincerity doesn't offer a coherent option either, because the champion of sincerity is on Sartre's account urging the guy to represent his being, his substance, as something which is independent from his past. And this is false on Sartre's view, because we are in part constituted by our pasts. So we have a problem, and it is, in Sartre's view, the general problem of how to think about our characteristics or our personality traits.
So our pasts, in some sense, do determine what we are, and also don't determine what we are. That seems like a paradox, almost.
Well, Sartre thinks that it is a paradox, and it's a paradox that we live, and it's a paradox which brings us to his, I suppose, central metaphysical claim about the human subject, which he expresses by saying that the human subject or consciousness is non-self-identical. This leads Sartre to accept these various contradictions that a person is a homosexual and a person is not a homosexual, because he thinks that these contradictions reflect the true metaphysical structure of the human subject, which is precisely this lack of self-coincidence. And it's on that front that human subjects contrast metaphysically with tables and chairs and inkwells, all of which are fully self-identical and of which contradictory predication can't hold.
Let's just try and clarify that. The table is a table because it has an essence. We know it's a table because it's got legs and stands up and you can put things on it. A human being, in contrast, has no essence. There's no one way that it has to be. There are no definitional features. It's somehow empty. Where consciousness is waiting to be filled with whatever we choose to put there. So to go to the case of the homosexual, the fact that somebody describes themselves as essentially a homosexual is to turn themselves into the equivalent of a table, that is to say there's an essence, and that's not right for a human being. But on the other hand, it's undeniable that there is a past history which makes it look as if that is what this person is determined to be.
Again, you've put it very, very succinctly and better than I would have done. Think of it this way. How is it possible for an individual, for a human subject, to be something which exhibits itself in a certain way up to a certain point and yet retains the capacity and the consciousness which allows them to change behaviour or take a different course of action, or even to reflect on their past and experience that past as alien or to put it in question in some way? So Sartre is not simply saying that human individuals have this capacity to modify their courses of action or their characteristic forms of behaviour. He's trying to identify what it is about human subjects that grounds this capacity. And this is then his theory of being for itself as characterised by these dimensions or structures of facticity on the one hand and transcendence on the other, and so on, in being a nothingness.
Those terms you used, facticity and transcendence, what do they mean?
Well, facticity is a very, very broad category for Sartre, and it includes all of the cultural and historical and social, political dimensions of a human individual for which they are in no sense responsible, ethnicity, nationality, and class and so on, but it also includes everything about them, which is made true in some sense by their previous actions. So the fact that they have been working at a particular institution for 20 years, that they've married and all that kind of stuff. It also includes their relationship with the physical environment. So it belongs to my facticity that I am presently determined, or have determined myself, as in a room sitting on a chair with my limbs at this particular angle and so on. Everything that comes to consciousness or that can be made reflectively an object for consciousness in such a way that I can put the question to myself, am I really that? Do I really want to be that? How do I stand in relation to that? Everything of that sort belongs to my facticity.
Okay, then what's transcendence?
Transcendence is quite simply the capacity to go beyond facticity. Transcendence is therefore a manifestation of freedom.
So going back to the example of the cafe waiter, by denying his freedom to himself, he's denying his transcendence, the ability to go beyond the mere facts of his dance as a waiter, the preordained role, as it were, of a waiter.
Yes, no, exactly. He's not saying that the waiter doesn't know that he could give up his job and do something else tomorrow. But he's suggesting that in the mode in which the waiter is presently experiencing himself, there is some kind of disavowal of his freedom and of his capacity to transcend his present condition. So it is for the waiter as if he could not be other than this waiter.
So is bad faith a moral term? Is it a term of condemnation?
Well, certainly not moral in any conventional narrow sense of moral, but it is certainly moral in a broader, you might say, an ethical sense, in that Sartre is seeking to elicit a reorientation in his readers. He's trying to get them to change their practical orientation. And this kind of self-confrontation, this conscientious confrontation with self, has certainly an ethical, indeed, a kind of religious dimension to it.
Well, to that extent, he's not just simply describing the way the world is empirically.
That's absolutely right. And I think it's a absolutely essential point about Sartre's philosophy as a whole, that the intention behind it is not, in terms of the famous distinction that Strawson makes between descriptive and revisionary metaphysics, Sartre's intentions are thoroughly revisionary. He's opposed to common sense. He thinks that common sense incorporates metaphysical falsehoods. Commonsensically, we think of ourselves as determinate beings, organisms. We're very prone to thinking about ourselves in naturalistic terms, in the way that Freud encouraged us, for example, to think about ourselves. Sartre wants us to throw all of that overboard. So it has to be appreciated when reading Sartre's descriptions that the measure of adequacy, the proper criterion for deciding whether or not Sartre's accounts are correct, is not simply the degree to which they seem to be borne out by inductive psychological observation.
You've obviously immersed yourself in Sartre's writing. Are you a fan of Sartre's?
Well, I do think that Sartre has been underrated, and I think that this is in part because his philosophical writings have been taken as a kind of extension of his literary writings, as if Being a Nothingness was just a sort of adjunct to his novels and plays. He belongs to a tradition which is attempting very, very ambitiously to present a comprehensive metaphysical system. At the very least, Sartre holds as much philosophical interest as a number of other earlier great systems in modern philosophy. I think he is as interesting as Fichte and Schelling and Hegel and Spinoza, for example. I think taking Sartre seriously and finding him interesting requires us to take seriously all of the metaphysics, the full ontological system, which he's described as trying to set out in Being a Nothingness. And taken in those terms, his system is enormously interesting, very, very impressive indeed.
And unlike many philosophers, he's got the capacity to change people's lives, I think.
That's true. I think there is undeniably a kind of impact that Sartre has on you when you read him at the age of 15 or 18 or 20 or perhaps even 25, which few other philosophers, perhaps Nietzsche, possibly Kierkegaard, have the same kind of effect. That, I think, isn't really sufficient to account for his philosophical value, but certainly adolescent excitement is a good cue or a good way into or a good reason for being interested in Sartre's ontology and metaphysics.
Sebastian Gardner, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you can hear more Philosophy Bites at www.philosophybites.com.